Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. The last episode ended with me sharing the story of my journeying with my young adult daughter as she experienced a mental health crisis. I said in this episode I'd talk about the life lessons I received from that major life challenge. After that, I'll continue with other life lessons to wrap up this series that I've called Finding Life Lessons in the Most Unlikely Places. Beverly D. Flaxington, in her Psychology Today article titled Life Lessons Are Everywhere If You Know Where to Look, says, "One of the great things about being a perpetual student of life is that if you are open to learning, you can find life lessons everywhere." And she further says, "Whatever you do in your life, stay watchful. Learn higher lessons about what the situation teaches you and how you can apply it to what matters." My hope is that my sharing of lessons I've learned from the school of life will prompt you to be open to whatever learning the universe has to offer you in your day-to-day life. And with that, I return to lessons learned in my role as caregiver to my daughter during her journey into the dark world of mental illness and addiction. My unparalleled adventure as a travel companion, so to speak, to a loved one lost in the otherly world of mental illness, catapulted me to new awareness. First, I came to understand that reality is an individually unique construct of the mind. And secondly, that true love is indestructible, but only if you truly love yourself. Concerning the constructs of reality, I mentioned in my story in the previous episode that my worldview was altered significantly by the experience. I gained the ability to much more authentically empathize with sufferers of mental illness, like the boy man rocking on the sidewalk. Because I had witnessed my brilliant daughter, considered quite normal by societal measures, become hijacked by mind snatchers that caused her to look, think, act and talk so drastically differently, I came to be able to clearly see that behind the symptoms of a neurological disorder or mental illness is a son or daughter. The reality of mental illness was reconstructed in my mind. As for my daughter, her perception of the world, her reality was drastically reconstructed while she was in her manic and psychotic states. Early on, she'd asked me if I could feel how the world had changed so magnificently overnight. "Didn't I notice it? There was nothing to be worried about anymore," she assured me. "No one has to work anymore." At other times, she was paranoid. As I mentioned in the previous episode, she believed she was being spied on by government agents. She was speaking with aliens. In her world, she was to meet Madonna at the airport and very angry with me when I wouldn't drive her to the airport. She was extremely frustrated with me for not admitting that the now late George Michael, an English singer-songwriter, record producer, and philanthropist, was her biological father, and I was killing him by my denial of this. She and I lived under the same roof, but during the time of her illness, my reality was greatly divergent from hers. So much so, I thought our attempts at communication must be rather like that between a human and an alien from a distant planet with no commonalities. I felt extremely frustrated, futilely attempting to convince her my reality was real and hers wasn't, as I had thought, until I became aware that her reality was as real to her as mine was to me. And isn't that indeed the case for all of us? We each have our own specific reality built from the materials of our unique nature and nurturing. While it is true the distinctions are not as great and evident between the realities of mentally healthy people with societal and cultural commonalities, no two people's realities can be identical. This belief has fostered my ability to be compassionate and non-judgmental. It has helped me be aware that what you say and what I hear can be significantly different to each of our minds. "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place," said George Bernard Shaw. And concerning love, there can be no illusion. I have come to understand that we can only give love to others if we have a real, true, undiminishable love for ourselves. When I first heard the term self-love many long years ago, it made me feel queasy. It's a selfish, self-serving concept, I thought. In more recent years, I've come to a better understanding of it, initially from hearing the story of the importance of putting on our own oxygen mask first when in an airport emergency so that we can breathe while we help others put on their masks. From this mental illness journey with my daughter, I now know self-love is the most unselfish, other-serving quality I can possess. In my odyssey, I traveled to the brink of fearing that even a mother's love for a child, perhaps the strongest bond in all sentient beings, was not strong enough to see me through this experience. I had no way of knowing how long I would be living with this unpredictable, threatening, verbally and emotionally abusive stranger who spoke in strange tongues. My mother's instinct was to protect my daughter from self-harm concerning her finances, spending like the maniac she was, relationships, substance abuse. But how bad would it become? Would it ever get better? Was this my new norm? I had no sense of how to pace my emotional self. Was my reservoir of love for her deep enough? The endurance test stressed me, the normally laid-back, calm, unruffable me, very near to my breaking point, and it was in that moment of greatest self-doubt that I came to realize the most important question should be, was the reservoir of love for myself deep enough? If I first protected myself from harm, put on my oxygen mask, I would have the greatest chance of supporting her through her ordeal. The oxygen mask meant setting very firm boundaries around acceptable activities in my home and ensuring follow-through on the consequences of not respecting those boundaries. It meant joining a support group and connecting regularly with those closest to me. It meant putting physical distance between my daughter and I for periods of time by asking her to stay at her dad's. It meant taking myself and my dog for walks through the forest. It meant playing Sudoku. Thank heaven for Sudoku. I found nothing banished my anguishing thoughts more effectively than concentrating totally on the numbers in that little puzzle whenever I most needed an escape. Sudoku in a hot, bubbly bath was the best. Putting on my oxygen mask first meant reminding myself over and over again that the illness was not my daughter. My beautiful, loving, thoughtful, considerate daughter was held captive out of the reach inside the alien in my home. It meant believing in myself enough to keep myself wrapped in a cloak of Teflon so her poisonous barbs and arrows slid off me harmlessly. It meant having to acknowledge the possibility of sending her out onto the street, because pulling us both down into the pit of total dysfunctionality would be worse for both. When we love ourselves enough to take good care of ourselves, we are empowering our best self to care for others with greatest efficacy. Without self-love, we become mired and incapacitated in resentment and victimization. The lessons from the crazy-making world of mania and psychosis beg me to answer the questions. When interacting with others, do I bear in mind that we each have our own distinct version of reality, both of which are beyond judgment? Do I love myself so that it makes the world a better place when I love my neighbor as I love myself? Next up, lessons from three quotes. Right now is the best time of my life to release myself from my disablers and hook up to my shooting star. That's the compiled lesson from three of my favorite quotes. I was nearing 60, stuck in indecisive angst about the financial implications of taking early retirement from a secure, well-paying corporate career to follow my passion into the unknown world of private enterprise. Then I stumbled onto this quote by George Eliot. It is never too late to be what you might have been. Ms. Eliot, yes, a woman in disguise, affirmed my dream. Now, as a writer and life coach, fostering the aspirations of individuals wanting to discover and actualize their life purpose, I'm becoming the person I'm meant to be. And with that becoming, I'm experiencing the sensation of falling ever more deeply in love with life. I'm enjoying excitement in waking up in the morning to the promise of discovery and new growth. I'm feeling fulfilled by making a difference. I'm energized in my thoughts, tumbling over one another in their eagerness to be made visible in writing. In exposing my real self to my work, my vulnerability is opening me up to possibility and fullness of life. But it's been a journey and continues to be a journey, often climbing steeply, sometimes getting lost, to reach the place of feeling comfortable enough to make myself vulnerable, to let my real self show. It's an unending and rewarding adventure of release from shame and blame, self-doubt, and fear of failure, perfectionism, other people's expectations, and so many more disablers. Doing away with disablers takes me to the second quote in my inspiring trio. The words of Michelangelo resonate with me. I saw the angel in the marble, and I carved until I set him free. I believe I know how that angel felt as it was being released from the stone that had encased it since time immemorial, a feeling akin to that of being released from self-sabotaging beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors that keep us stuck and immobilized in life. Michelangelo's emerging angel had to be awestruck by the promise of flight to the stars and beyond. Which takes me to the third quote. Hitch your wagon to a star or you will just stay where you are, said D.H. Lawrence. My interpretation of this quote is that the wagon is our wagon of wants, what we want out of life and what life wants out of us, i.e. our meaning and purpose. The star is our unfettered, empowered, shining self, akin to Michelangelo's liberated angel. And when we hitch our wants, our life purpose, to our unique, genuine, shooting star self, we take off. It becomes impossible to just stay where we are. And the most beautiful thing of all, as George Eliot's words remind me, is that the hitching of our wagon to our star can happen no matter what age we're at. The lesson from the three quotes begs me to answer the question, am I committed to being open to discovery and release all my life long, no matter what my age, in order to ever more effectively serve my purpose? Next, lessons from the journey, not the destination. Halfway there is perfect. It's amazing how a paradigm shift can be so liberating. I used to assume that because I wasn't yet a subject matter expert in any area, and because I hadn't mastered any form of artistry, it was premature for me to offer up anything of myself in the area of knowledge or creativity. I wasn't good enough yet. For as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a writer and speaker. More than 15 years prior to the time of initially writing this, I had made minor forays into both areas, and I met with what I then considered disaster. In hindsight, I know it was inappropriate and unprofessional for me to accept gigs as a motivational speaker without researching the wants or needs of the audiences. I jeopardized the reputation of the event planners and undermined my credibility as a speaker. But instead of learning from my mistakes in these attempts, I shamefully hid them. I failed. Therefore, I was a failure as a speaker, I deduced. I needed to get back into my hidey hole and pull the earth over my head. The painful experiences reinforced my assumption that it's wrong to try something until I have it down perfectly, instead of reminding me I can do better next time with appropriate research. It was a confusing assumption because I was well aware that with each passing day and new life experience, I was learning and growing. If this is in fact a lifelong condition, how would I ever reach the pinnacle of expertise? Chances are I'd always be more knowledgeable, more masterful the following year. Then I could venture out again. Over the course of many self-help books, personal and professional development sessions, and motivational speaker events, my paradigm began to shift. It started to become clear to me that none of these authors, trainers, or speakers knew at all. Nonetheless, each and one of them had valuable nuggets of enlightenment for me, mined from their individually unique life experiences and perspectives. With growing confidence and self-esteem, I found the courage to crawl out of my hidey hole to offer my one-of-a-kind stories on both page and stage. Might I look back from a future date and find the nuggets I'm offering today to be dull by comparison to what I'm offering in the future? Perhaps, but that's inconsequential, as I've come to learn. Had none of my many mentors not shared their imperfect wisdom from wherever they were on their journey, I would not have received their gifts to grow on. Lessons from the journey. I used to have perfectionism as my destination on my life journey, and when I would arrive there, I'd make the world a better place. I've come to understand I'm perfect now, in my imperfection, standing exactly where I am on my path. There is absolutely nothing wrong with where I am right now. I am a perfect work in progress. This makes so much sense to me that I find it incredible I didn't get it for so long. The message I now see is out there, everywhere. Is there something wrong with a 10-month-old learning how to walk? Is there something wrong with a building under construction? Is there something wrong with a runner not yet at the finish line? Is there something wrong with an apple pie baking in the oven? Is there something wrong with a caterpillar because it's not yet a butterfly? Is there something wrong with the sun that's not yet fully risen? Is there something wrong with work that's in progress? The lesson from the journey, not the destination, begs me to answer the question, is my ego sabotaging my ability to accept and offer myself as a perfectly imperfect work in progress? Next, lessons from Al-Anon. D-E-T-A-C-H. DETACH is the acronym for Don't Even Think About Changing Him or Her. I clearly remember arriving at my first Al-Anon meeting several years ago, my stomach churning with a mix of nervousness and curiosity. I also vividly recall leaving 90 minutes later, pumped and believing everyone should attend Al-Anon meetings. Actually, probably just about anyone could meet the qualification to be an Al-Anon member. You qualify by being affected by someone else's drinking. That's it. The readings and the shared life stories, always about the Al-Anon member, not the alcoholic in his or her life, are empowering. But for me, it was the acronyms, slogans, and sayings that were most enduring and transformative. They're easy to recall in those moments when they're most needed. They simply and succinctly convey life-changing messages. And they're applicable to all aspects of life, not just in the context of the relationship with a drinker. Here's a few of them. One day at a time. Chunks life down into bite-sized pieces when I start choking on the big pieces. Let go and let God. Relieves me from the requirement to figure it all out myself. Change my attitude, change my life. Returns power back to me when I slide into blame. Progress, not perfection. Enables me to feel joy in the journey. The meetings I attended weekly over a few years were a revelation of guardedness and vulnerability, brokenness and healing, losses and wins, hatred and love, injury and pardon, doubt and faith, despair and hope, darkness and light, sadness and joy. There were times to be consoled and to console, to be understood and to understand, to be loved and to love. As you may or may not recognize, I've borrowed here from the prayer of St. Francis. Thank you for saying it like it is, Francis. For me, they were community gatherings of knowing individuals offering and receiving support. The mere, actually not so mere, fact of being in the company of others with relatable experiences greatly alleviated the emotional and mental burden previously shouldered alone. I had walked into that first meeting, still of the mindset that I'd learn what I had to do to change the ways of the drinker in my life. However, the recurring message, D-E-T-A-C-H, critically redirected my focus to learning what I had to do to change my way of being with the drinker in my life. The amazing thing was, the Al-Anon experience not only guided me away from codependency, so I was no longer a marionette dancing to the moves of the alcoholic's disease, it enabled me to understand that my response to any life circumstance is not determined by the circumstance itself, but rather by what I choose it to be. Once I came to understand there are no strings tying my response to a circumstance, I became my own puppeteer. A final empowering lesson from Al-Anon is in the form of a catchy reminder of the process of releasing myself from toxic ways of thinking or behaving in response to life circumstances. It's face it, trace it, embrace it, erase it, replace it. Face it. Become aware of, come face to face with my negative or self-sabotaging beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors. Trace it. Attempt to establish where I think those saboteurs come from and why. Embrace it. Accept that when I thought or acted in those ways in the past, I did the best I could with what I had at the time, but it no longer needs to be that way. Forgive myself. Erase it. Knowing that the thinking and behavior no longer serves my best interest, seek to eliminate my shortcomings with help from sources that can support me. Refuse to participate in the same thinking and behavior patterns. Know that I may slip from time to time, but that's okay. It's a process, and it's about progress, not perfection. Replace it. Vacuums need to be filled. Therefore, when I remove my negative or self-sabotaging thinking or behavior, I need to put something else in the emptied place. Fill the void with positive, healthy responses. Use the tools of the Al-Anon program. Sometimes I'll try something new and it won't work out for me, but that's okay too. I'll just try something different. The lesson from Al-Anon begs me to answer the question, am I using the tools I've acquired along the way to focus on changing my thinking and behaviors in order to healthfully respond to circumstances outside my control? And the final lesson? Lesson from the fish out of water. I feel like I'm not in the right place. This comment to my coworker opened up a conversation I still remember clearly more than 30 years later. I shared my vague but persistent feelings of not belonging, of not being in the right place. He responded with an analogy of a fish out of water, saying that the way you feel, that's the way you feel until you find God. He was a religious young man. Our concepts of God may have been divergent, and in the intervening years, my own concept of God has morphed dramatically, but that's of no matter. His words hit a chord then, and my interpretation of them remains meaningful to me today. I don't belong. I'm not in the right place. That's the way I will feel until I align with my source, my life meaning and purpose. At that time in the late 1980s, I was still struggling with a whole whack of life challenges, not yet having found my way onto my healing path. I intellectually understood the concept of a fish out of water, but didn't really get it at the cellular level. Not until I realized I am that gasping, fading fish, and no one's going to come along to toss me back into the water. With this realization, I began to flex my tail muscles to start wiggling painfully back across the thorny, rocky, hot, dry land, scraping my belly raw in the general direction I sensed the water to be. That's to say, I began moving away from being who I thought I was supposed to be towards being who I am meant to be. It is a process of realizing my authentic spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical self. The moment I began experiencing a hint of the soothing sensation of being in alignment with my life purpose, I was that fish having found its way into just enough depth of water, cool, fluid, restorative water, to waggle my tail and take off towards the depths. Ah, the refreshing, liberating, buoying sense of coming into my element. Now a whole new realm continues to open up for this fish that is me as I swim ever more deeply into my source, as I become ever more immersed in my life purpose. The lesson from the fish out of water begs me to answer the question, when I feel I'm out of my element, when a roughness is scraping my belly, do I flex my tail muscles to waggle me to where I belong? And that's a wrap of life lessons, which just keep on coming day after day, sometimes subtly, sometimes blatantly. To conclude this episode and the sharing of some of the life lessons that have come my way, here are a few perspectives on life lessons from others. I really like how Cesare Pavese says it. Lessons are not given, they are taken. My interpretation of this is that opportunities for learning from our experiences are always there, but they don't become lessons unless we actively take learning from the experience. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Life is a succession of lessons which must be lived to be understood. All is riddle, and the key to a riddle is another riddle." This resonates with me. If you heard previous episodes, you may recall I've likened life to a puzzle. So I get this analogy. Life is a riddle, and the life lessons are clues to the riddle of life. Or life is a puzzle, and the life lessons are continuously learning are pieces of the puzzle falling into place. Says Dennis Waitley, "There are no mistakes or failures, only lessons." I agree with this with a little modification. I'd say there are no mistakes or failures if we choose to transform them into lessons. If we don't take the lessons from them, they remain as mistakes and failures that diminish us. And finally, Bedsea.com shares an excellent piece of advice in this regard. Keep your eyes open. The aha moment can arrive any time and when least expected. That's it for today. I invite you to tune in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World to hear about the power of growing older. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.